Impact, a continuing series of talks based on modern and ancient wisdom. And here is our host, Dr. Anil Mehta, at the Bakersfield Chinmaya Mission.
Next month, we have a seminar at Cal State on spirituality and healthcare. So I thought I would talk today about what is spirituality. What is spirituality? And what is the difference between religion and spirituality? Maybe I could ask all of you, is there any difference between religion and spirituality?
With religion, you are specifying especially one religion, you are focusing onto one, whatever the form you worship. Spirituality is universe, it's one conscious way.
That's very good. Anything else?
I think that religion is the outer garment of spirituality. Talk about somebody's spirituality, you're talking about something more inward, less connected to a particular ritual or a particular doctrine, and it is more universal.
I think you have the idea. They say religions are many, but spirituality is one. And obviously religions are many, Hinduism, Buddhism, Sikhism, Islam, Christianity. But the essence of all is spirituality. And again, religion has two aspects. One is the rituals, which may be different. A Christian would go to church and kneel down and pray. A Muslim would face Mecca and then five times a day, fall down on his mat and pray. Hindu would, offer a flame, around the fire. So the rituals may be different. And we believe that that is religion. We get so focused on the rituals that this is the only way to worship. And this is the only right way. But the essential philosophy, the religion has rituals and has philosophy. The rituals are different, but the underlying philosophy in all the religions is pretty much the same. Whether you look at what Christ preached or what Buddha talked about or what Guru Nanak said or what Shankaracharya said. There are certain, differences based upon the audience, based upon the time, based upon the people that they were speaking to, but the underlying message is the same. And therefore, we say that spirituality is the, as Dr. Betty said, it is the essential teaching. And it is what tells us who we are and takes us inward. And it is the thread that binds all the religions together, whether you look at the Ten Commandments or the Buddha's Dharmapada, where he has given his eight tenets or the 23 values in the Bhagavad Gita, but it is the essential thread which kind of holds the necklace of all the religions together. Now, what is the essence of spirituality? There are a few points that one has to practice. If we say that we are spiritual, we all like to think that we are. But what are the points that I must have? First of all, we all have to work. Nobody can survive even for a minute without work. Even if you say, I'm going to do nothing, you're still going to have to eat. You still have to cook. Maybe you have enough money. You don't need to go out and work, but you still have to get food. You still have to eat. You still have to bathe, you still have to take care of your body. So, in the Gita it says that nobody can survive even for a minute without work. But how do we work? And that is very, very important. They say work with detachment. Detachment, we take it as lack of interest. I don't care what happens. But when we say work with detachment, we say work without likes and dislikes. Whatever work has been assigned to you, whatever job you have been taken, whatever station you have been placed in, do what is the right thing without getting attached, like a judge. Now, a prisoner comes before him, and he does not judge whether he is black or white, or whether I know him or I do not know him, or whether he belongs to my church. No, none of that. He applies the letter of the law. And if the patient person needs to be freed, he gets freed. If the person needs to get jailed, he gets jailed. If he needs to get life imprisonment or even death penalty. So he does what is right without getting involved in who the person is, but focusing on the letter of the law. Similarly, a surgeon who is operating upon a patient, has to look at the patient, ideally, if he's doing his duty, rather than worrying about whether he's going to get paid or not, or what is the insurance. I mean, unfortunately, all these factors do come in. But the right thing is that when he's operating, his focus should be on what is the right thing to do. I have to save this person's life. And sometimes it may be a person whom he dislikes. Maybe he had a fight with this person, but he comes in the middle of the night bleeding to the emergency room, and if he's on call, it is his job to take care. So they say, do what is right and do what you're supposed to do, whatever job you have been given by the Lord, whatever station you have been placed in, whether you're a wife or a teacher or a mother or a teacher, whatever job you have, a healthcare professional, do it without likes and dislikes. Do it without worrying about what is going to be the result. Do what is the right thing at that moment, and the result will take care of itself. While you are working, if you are worried about how am I going to happen and what's going to happen, then your work is not going to be efficient. Like a student taking an examination has 8 questions. She will answer the 8 questions to the best of her ability, worrying about the questions. But if she starts thinking, if I don't do well in this exam, I won't get into the university, and then I won't get into medical school, and then my parents will be disappointed, then all those thoughts are coming, and her performance will suffer. Then another very important factor in a spiritual person is this attitude called samatha, or even-mindedness, where once I do what is my duty, then I accept the result with equanimity. I have done the best of my ability. But after that, if I win or lose, I do not get over happy if I win or over disappointed if I lose, like an athlete running in the Olympics. Now there are 8 or 10 people running in the final heat. All of them are top class athletes. All of them have prepared well. They are representing their different countries. And they're all running to the best of their ability. Now, out of them, only one can win the gold medal. Now, if the other 7 get disappointed and shoot themselves or, become depressed, then that is not it. The idea is I did my best. And then when the result comes, I accept it cheerfully. Like in the case of the athlete, he can say, the other 7 prepared better than I did. That's why I was last out of the 8. But at least I was the best in my country. So joys and sorrows does not mean that you should not try your best. But having tried your best, be even-minded with the result. Whatever comes, one has to be equanimous. This reminds me of a little story. This woman, was reading the newspaper, and her husband had bought a lottery ticket, and she read and she said, "Oh my God, we have won $1,000,000. And she was all excited, but she was able to contain her excitement. Now, she didn't want to tell her husband right away because he had a very serious heart condition, and she was afraid that if I tell him, he'll get overjoyed and he might suffer a heart attack and something bad may happen. So husband had gone to work. So she called the family doctor, what should I do? So doctor says, "Don't worry, I'll come over there in the evening and we'll talk, and over a beer I'll tell him nicely, and even if something happens, I'm there, I know him, I'll take care of him." So the family doctor and the husband are having a beer together, and the family doctor jokingly says, "Bill, how about if you won $1,000,000, what would you do?" And Bill thought, he's joking. He said, "If I won $1,000,000, I would give you half." And the doctor had a heart attack. Had to be taken to the hospital. So that is what they say, that be even-minded. No matter what happens in life, joys and sorrows will be there. Accept them as either you can accept them as the grace of the Lord, but then again, you know, better than that, you say, this is my karmas, this is my actions. Whatever is happening, it is as a result of my actions in this life or in previous lifetimes. And then you do not get affected, you know, because there is nobody else to blame. I don't have to blame my boss, my wife, my child, my husband, nobody. This also leads to dispassion. And again, when we think about being passionate, we say, you know, I am so enthusiastic about it. So you mean to say I should have no enthusiasm? I should have no desire to succeed? No, we don't say that. We say you should do your ability to the job, to the best of your ability, with full enthusiasm, full effort, and a desire to succeed, a desire to win. But do not have this attitude of I and mine. Because the moment that comes, that I did it, you know, I am the one, then you become arrogant, you become proud. And then if it is mine, then, you know, this thing is mine and this is not mine and this I like and this I don't like. And so all these problems come, all the ego arises, the jealousy, the arrogance, the greed, the competition. But as I said, I am not the doer. Have the attitude that the Lord is working through me. And I'm doing my best, but I'm doing it for Him. I'm doing it for the Lord. And whatever job I am doing, once I dedicate it to the Lord, then that job automatically becomes good. So do not get too attached. Do not have too much selfishness, too much desire, because that's what happens when I get so attached to something, then all these negativities arise. Then they say, consistent application. In the world, what we find is that some people have starting trouble. You know, they just won't get a project started. You know, oh, it's too difficult. I don't know if I can do it. It's too hard. You know, so many people have failed. And there's so much competition. And they forget, you know, that people like Bill Gates, you know, he started as an ordinary computer programmer. If he had thought, you know, what am I, you know, but look at it, with his consistent effort, you know, with the help of two or three other people, he made a wonderful, great company, which is respected all over the world. So consistency of application is very, very important. One should have the right goal, and whether it's a worldly goal, which is very good, I want to be successful in the world, or a spiritual goal, that I want to realize the self, I want to know who is God, I want to know who am I want to know what is my purpose, why am I on this earth. And once you have decided what your goal is, then do not let any obstacles come in your way. So continuous, consistent application is very, very important. So some people have starting trouble. Other people start so many projects, and then halfway they get discouraged. It's not going to work. So they abandon that. And they start something second, and then they start something third. Or in the spiritual field, you know, some people, I'm going to read Buddhist philosophy. So every day for 6 months they read Buddhism, and they sit in meditation. And they say, this is not good. I'm going to do this breathing yoga, you know, this Sahaj yoga, where I'm going to breathe every day. So they get up in the morning and they breathe every day for 6 months. And then third day they say, this is not good. You know, I must go to the temple and pray. So they do elaborate prayers for 2 hours, 3 hours. They're all very good. I'm not saying there is anything wrong in doing prayer, doing yoga, doing meditation. But one has to see what one's abilities and capabilities are, what one's interest is, and then focus on that, and then have a consistent goal, and then work on that. We're not saying that you should be fanatical or that you should put others down, but this suits me the best. And each one of us can know what is my goal, what is my purpose, what is my ability, what is it that will take me highest in spirituality. So consistency of application is very, very important. Another problem in spiritual progress is lack of concentration. And we find that especially when we sit for meditation. You know, during the day, we have no problem concentrating. But the moment we sit for meditation, all the thoughts come, you know. Oh, where am I to go? Whom am I going to meet? What am I going to tell? What did she say yesterday? What did he say yesterday? Why is my mind running? Why is it not? And constantly we find that we are unable to concentrate. Whether maybe you're sitting in the church and praying, or whether you're listening to a discourse from the priest, or maybe you are meditating. And why is that? They say because we do not love what we do. I'd like to give an example. You tell a person to sit and meditate. My mind is wandering. I can't sit for even 5 minutes. And then next minute you give him, somebody owes him $1,000. So he gave him $20 bills. So now he has to count those $20 bills to make sure that he got $1,000. Now there, does he have full concentration or not? Or does his mind even wander a minute? 1, 2, 3, 4. I mean, he's totally 100% he's concentrated. His mind won't even wander for a second. Why? Because he loves money. And he wants to make sure that he got $1,000, not 980. A child, you know, you tell him to sit down and study, and his mind will run and he will look here and there and he will want to go out and play. But you put him in front of the TV, 4 hours, you know, he's single-pointed. His eyes don't even leave the TV, or nowadays it's computer or DS or I don't know, whatever these toys that kids keep coming out with. Then for 3 hours, 4 hours, they got single-pointed. Why? Because of love. So there was a famous saint in India called Raman Maharishi who said that when you are chanting the name of the Lord, or when you are meditating upon the Lord, your attention should be constant and single-pointed. How? He said, Ajya Dharaya Stotra Sasangam. Just as in India, of course, we use clarified butter, which we call ghee, but here we can give an example of oil. Now, I have oil in a big vessel, and I want to pour it into a smaller vessel. Now, when I pour the oil, how does it flow? Continuous stream. There's not even a break. It's a continuous stream flow of oil, and there's not. So he says, just as when you're pouring, there is a constant flow of oil, so your mind should be constantly flowing towards the Lord. When you're chanting the name of the Lord, or you're chanting your mantra, your mind should be constantly focused only on the sound of the mantra, only on the form of the Lord. And you have to develop that concentration. So use that example. Think I'm pouring oil, and how with there is a constant stream of flow of oil, so constant flow of thoughts towards the Lord. And that can only happen when we have love. As I said, a person who loves money has full attention on money. A child who loves TV has full attention on the TV. So I have to develop love for the Lord. I have to develop a relationship with the Lord. We have talked about that many times. You can call him your loving master, your creator, your father, your mother, your friend, your child, your spouse. Any relationship. Once you have love, then your mind will automatically flow. As we have talked about, you know, when you are in love for the first time, you know, you don't need a reminder, you know, to think about your beloved. You don't say, I'm only going to think about her from 10 to 11 on Sunday morning, which is what we do for the Lord. So constant thinking about it, and your mind has to be constantly in the Lord. Recently, I read a very, listened to a beautiful example that, you know, on the 24th of August, we had the full moon. And they say, when do you see the full moon? When the moon is facing the sun. When the moon and the sun are totally facing each other, the 100% of the moon is reflected upon the earth and you can see the entire full moon. But if the moon is facing partially, maybe facing half, then you see a half moon, you see a quarter, a crescent, depending on how much of the moon is facing the sun, that much of the moon you see. So the moon is represented by the mind, because they say that the mind and the moon have a very close connection. That's why somebody who is mentally not well, we call him a lunatic. You know, of course, it's not a good term. Nowadays, they use things like mentally challenged and things like that. Or a lunatic asylum. So the moon, and that's why they say at the full moon time, you see more psychiatric problems. So the moon has been equated with the mind. So the moon is equated with the mind, and the sun is equated with knowledge, with God, with the life principle. So just as when the moon is totally facing the sun, it is brilliant and effulgent. So similarly, when the mind is totally facing the Lord, then the mind becomes brilliant, mind becomes shining, mind becomes full of knowledge, full of brilliance. So they say, keep your attention fully upon the Lord, not half, because what our idea is that half or one third or one fourth or one tenth of our time is spent for the Lord, the rest of the time we don't even have time for Him. So they say that whatever activity you're doing dedicated to the Lord, when anybody praises you, you say, thank you Lord, dedicated, Krishnarpanamastu, may it be dedicated to the Lord. So constantly remember Him and keep your mind fully upon the Lord, just as the moon, when kept fully upon the sun, is brilliant. So when my mind is fully upon the Lord, then my mind shines, my mind becomes brilliant and can illumine the whole world. And that's what we find in the lives of these great saints. They had put their entire attention on the Lord, and in their face you can see the reflection of the Lord. For most of us, we have a very small part of our mind, and that's why we don't see that same brilliance and that same glow that we see in the lives of great saints. So they say, turn your attention to Him and keep it constantly upon Him. Then, of course, having right knowledge. Because in this world, we find that we spend a lot of time in acquiring different knowledge, and that is good. You need knowledge for your career, to be successful in your business. But then after that, we find that we waste so much time in just reading useless, you know, magazines and newspapers. And it's funny, you know, people spend so much time listening to the weather. You know, they have nothing to do. They're going to be staying home all day. But they want to know what is the weather in Minnesota. It is snowing. For what? Why are you wasting your time? If you're a fisherman, okay, then you need to know, is there going to be rain or sun? If you have nothing to do, why are you spending so much time worrying about the weather? And we spend so much time, these weather channels we watch, and then they get excited and they show all these hurricanes and tornadoes. I mean, useless information we accumulate for nothing. What are you going to do with that information? And we know the weather in the whole of the US, so what? If it's snowing in Cleveland, how does it affect you? But no, we have to watch the weather. So, no. Focus on what is important to you. What is the purpose of my life? Why am I here? Why has the Lord created me? Why do I have this human body, this human intelligence? And who is this God? Who am I? Am I really this body, or am I something more than that? What is it that makes me think? What is it that makes the whole world move? And what is it that, you know, when you run the water tap, It amazes me. There's 4 billion people on this earth, 4 billion and multiplying. And the Lord makes sure every one of them has clean running water to bathe and to drink and to... And we waste water and just run it. And think about it. How are all these billions of people getting water? From where all this snow and rain? Who is this one that is taking care of all of us? You know, it's a simple thing like, you know, taking a shower or washing your hands can become a spiritual activity. Just remember Him constantly, and that is the beauty of this beautiful creation. How are all these people nourished? You know, it amazes me. Not only the humans, all the insects and the plants and the birds and the fish, even the tiniest little bug crawling around, the Lord has provided for his food and shelter and clothing and water and everything, whatever he needs. You know, the cat, how she changes her fur, you know, from the winter the fur grows and the summer it ends. How does the Lord maintain that? It's so beautiful. And spend time on that rather than wasting it on useless things. So have the right knowledge. And of course, the last and the most important thing, the reason I kept it for last, because all these 8 points lead us to that one essence of spirituality, which is the most important, which I think Baljinder and Stafford talked about in the beginning, and that is the oneness. There is only one God, there is only one creator that is sustaining this whole universe, all the plants and the birds and the fish and the humans and the animals. We can call him Father in heaven, you can call him Allah, call him Vaheguru, call him Krishna, Buddha. It doesn't matter what you call him. It doesn't matter which form you worship him. People get so focused, you know, this is the form, which form. It doesn't matter which form you worship him, whether he is sitting in meditation like Shiva, or he's playing the flute, or he's on the cross, or he has a crescent. It doesn't matter which building you worship him, in which book you read, which, whether you chant the Sanskrit or not, whether you can chant the Sanskrit, whether you know the Psalms, whether you know the hymns, or whether you know the prayers, it doesn't matter. Worship him in any form. It is the sincerity of devotion that counts. And that is what our teacher Swami Chinmayananda says. He says, it is useless to argue which form of the Lord is superior. It doesn't matter which form you worship him. It is the sincerity of devotion that counts. So worship him, think about him, and then see the oneness. But it does not mean that everybody is the same. Yes, one is my father, one is my mother, one is my brother, one is my sister, one is my friend, one is my business associates, one is my gym, you know, acquaintance. Yeah, so you deal with people as you're supposed to deal with them. It's not that everybody, you deal the same. And a child you will talk to differently as opposed to an adult, as opposed to your boss, as opposed to your friend. But while you are dealing with the individual, even though you're dealing with them based upon their age, based upon your relationship, you never forget that there is one Lord who is the constant factor. And that is what, and that is not somebody far from me, but that is me. And with that attitude, when you work in the world, then you see that the whole universe is me alone. I alone am there. And that is what the Upanishads say, the Ashtavakra Gita and those scriptures say, that I am pervading in this whole universe. How can I, a little individual, pervade the universe? I cannot. But I, as the consciousness, can be there in the whole universe, because that is only one consciousness, which is my essential nature. So that is the essence of spirituality. That is the goal. That is the culmination of spirituality.
This concludes this segment of Impact with Dr. Anil Mehta. Join us again next time.